his real story, because damn, he sure knows his way around subduing prisoners. Healer my ass. Give him a nice view of his final resting place, I say over the comm to Jeffers, making sure Captain Bob will hear my order too. Jeffers manhandles our prisoner over to the clear panel, and Rollo stares out into the abyss.
Oh, Jesus, no!
He whimpers. Rollo's afraid of the dark! I can't keep the glee from my voice. Rollo's playing his role perfectly, and he doesn't even realize it. Jesus isn't going to save you, Rollo. Only Captain Bob can do that. I sit back and wait for a response, almost certain I won't have to wait long. Less than 5 seconds later, Rollo's head twists his face up toward the comm box above him, his voice full of hope.
Captain Bob? Did you say Captain Bob?
I cut Bob off the comm so I can speak directly with Rollo. Yes, I did, Rollo. He claims not to know you, but I think he's lying. Tell me who he is and what he's up to, and you'll come out of the chamber.
Out? As in, out into the dark?
His voice holds a thread of fear wrapped tightly around one of hope. I'm almost tempted to make him wait on my answer, but I'm not that cruel. No, out, as in back onto the ship. I link Captain Bob into the conversation. So what's it going to be, Rollo? Do you know Captain Bob or not? He sighs heavily and slumps in Jeffers' hold, no longer resisting.
Yes, Rollo knows Captain Bob. He's lying,
Captain Bob says in a hurry.
I don't know this Rollo person. Never met him. Never even heard of him.
Give it up, Bob, Rollo says.
Rollo isn't going to float for your games. Rollo doesn't float for anyone.
Games. I knew it. Baybong turns around, elbows on the arms of his chair as he waits for my next move. I wish I knew what it should be, because I think I'm really close to figuring this thing out. Talk to me, Rollo. I say, all seriousness. I don't like playing games without knowing the rules. Tell me what I need to know. He looks up at the visual link, imploring me with a very sad expression.
Can I do it up there with you? Float chambers make me nervous.
For the first time he's stowed away on my ship, he's not referring to himself as some other person, Rollo this and Rollo that. It's almost enough to make me cave, but not quite. The visual link is so clear, I can see that little tick at the corner of his eye going again. Bastard. That's a negative, Rollo. Request declined. Jeffers, remove yourself from the float chamber, but not before giving our friend Rollo here a nice pat-down. I have a feeling it's something we should have done when he first showed up. I switch off the audio comm, but keep the visual link going. Baybong and I watch in silence as Jeffers does a pretty efficient frisk of a struggling Rollo, and I smile when he doesn't come up empty-handed. Jeffers holds up a transmit device at the camera so we can see what he found. Son of a bitch. I say to mostly myself. Well, that'll teach me not to do a full search on stowaways. Damn it! How could I be so naive? At least this explains how good old Captain Bob found us out here in the middle of nowhere. Now I get to worry about how many other scumbags are on their way toward us and whether I've totally screwed my chances at getting into the Alliance. I'm pretty sure they have a no-dumbass policy. I switch the audio back on. Nice try, by the way, Rollo. I'm pissed knowing that this dipshit got one over on me. But even so, I have nothing to lose now. He has no choice but the one I want him to make. He just needs to fully appreciate how serious I am. Happy floating! Jeffers backs out of the room and shoves Rollo away when he tries to follow. Even though I know I'm in complete control of the situation, the sound of the float chamber door sealing shut makes shivers go up my spine. Rollo turns to the camera and starts screaming.
I'll talk! Just don't send me out there, please!
Chapter 12. I wait for Jeffers to get up to the flight deck before continuing the conversation with Rollo. This delay is doing wonders for the situation. My prisoner is trembling all over and standing as far from the release door as he possibly can. I'd feel sorry for the guy, but it's his own fault that he's in there. Coming on my ship with a transponder, leading Captain Bob here for no good purpose? Bastard. He deserves a good floating, but I'm not ready to do that yet. We'll see what his confession sounds like first. Jeffers strides into the room, taking his chair without a word. His expression is dark, and I can tell he's not happy with me. Oh well, can't please the world now, can I? I turn my attention back to Rollo. Okay, Rollo, I'm ready to hear your confession. I mute my transmission to speak to the commubot. Adele?
Yes, Captain.
Monitor blood pressure and biorhythms of the individual in the float chamber. After he answers each of my secondary questions, tell me whether his levels are up or down after the first three control questions.
Yes, Captain.
I'm sorry, Captain. I'm really sorry,
Rollo says. He sounds like he's about to cry. Rollo, shut up. I need to ask you some questions.
Okay.
He drops his head. I wait 10 seconds so that Adele can get her readings on him before we start. It should only take her 5, but I want to be sure not to screw this up. I've done it in training loads of times, but never with this much at stake. Rollo, is it true that you stowed away on my ship?
Yes, it's true.
Rollo, is it true that you like to eat fritters? He looks up, confused.
Yes, it's true.
And is it true that you were told to work in the biogrid today with Lucinda?
Yes, that's true too.
I smile and nod. Now we have our control questions out of the way and a baseline for his biorhythms.
What's going on over there?
Captain Bob's voice booms out over the flight deck. I wave at Baybong, telling him to handle it. He leans toward his array.
Just relax, old man. We'll let you know when the floater's ready.
Baybong cuts off his transmission and sits back in his chair, his hand resting idly on his array. His attention is split between monitoring the PC for any funny moves and watching me.
Time to party.
Rollo, how do you know Captain Bob? Rollo sighs heavily.
Captain Bob and I met at the Centurion 4 station about 2 weeks ago.
I mute my connection. Adele, is he telling the truth?
Biorhythms indicate yes.
Good. From now on, at the conclusion of his answers, flash me green for truth, red for lies.
Would you like it as a hologram or on the main clear panel, Captain?
Clear panel.
Might as well let everyone see the results of my interrogation.
I get Rollo back on my line. Rollo, why are you aligned with Captain Bob?
We have mutual interests.
A green light pops up on the clear panel, indicating he's still being truthful. I smile at how well this is going. Do your mutual interests include doing something that will harm me?
No.
I wait for a green or red light, but get nothing. Muting my comm link with Rollo, I stare up at the ceiling. Adele, truth or lie?
Indeterminable.
I frown. What's that supposed to mean?
It means that it is impossible for me to determine by reading his biorhythms whether he is being truthful or deceitful.
What's happening with his rhythms?
Do you want my theory, Captain?
I sigh and shake my head. I really, really hate commubots sometimes. Yes, Adele, I'd love to hear your theory.
I believe he is controlling his reactions purposefully. That is why it first seems that he is lying, but then very quickly appears as if he's telling the truth. Holy shit.
A chill runs through me. I know this technique. I learned how to do it very well, in fact. I take a deep breath before continuing. Thank you, Adele. Do me a favor, when you see that again, flash me a blue light.
Yes, Captain. I will flash you a blue light when I note that he appears to be answering in a deceptive or manipulative manner.
I find myself smiling, not hating my commubot nearly as much as I did 2 seconds ago. Excellent. I get Rollo back on the line. Rollo, have you been trained in anti-interrogation tactics?
Who, me?
He points to his chest.
No, Rollo has never been trained in anti... what'd you call it?
A blue light flashes. Something is off about his answer.
He used his name again.
Jeffers mutters, his mind obviously on the same track as mine about our stowaway's quirk.
Bingo.
Rollo, stop speaking in the third person. He looks left and right before answering.
Okay.
A niggling has started deep in my gut, and I'm starting to feel sick over it. Something very messed up is going on here, but I can't put my finger on what it is. I'm missing something.
What's going on?
Baibong asks.
What are you thinking?
Jeffers is staring at the clear panel, but I know he's waiting for my answer, too. He's been trained. He's playing me.
He's playing us, you mean?
Baibong says, going back to staring at our prisoner.
Yeah, us.
I feel so much better after hearing my friend declare us as a team like that, but I try to stay cool on the outside so Rollo won't detect how much of a mess this is turning me into.
Rollo, do you know me?
He shrugs.
I guess.
A green light flashes. Jeffers finally turns around to face me.
Why would you ask him that question?
I shake my head. I don't know. There's just something weird going on here.
What's happening in there?
Captain Bob says.
You going to float him or what?
My eyebrows go up at that. I guess there's no love lost between these guys.
He's a pawn,
Jeffers says quietly, watching Rollo pace back and forth in front of the comm box. I nod. This makes sense to me. Why else would Rollo say he knows Bob, but Bob tell me to go ahead and float him?
You're right, he is.
But why is Rollo coming after me? Is he just a run-of-the-mill chancer? Or is something else at the root of his agenda? It's when Rollo looks up at the camera from an angle, his eyes squinting ever so slightly, that a flash of recognition comes to me. I lean in closer to the clear panel, as if that's going to make it any easier to see through what I'm starting to suspect has been put in place to hide the real man behind a mask.
What's up?
Baibong says.
I know that face you make.
Oh yeah? I get up from my chair, my eyes glued to the image of Rollo on the panel.
What's that?
It's your I'm-about-to-go-full-bitch-mode look.
When Rollo reaches up and tugs his left ear, I know. I just know I've seen him somewhere before. Only before, he had a different face and a different voice. God damn it! How is this possible?
I spin around and leap down the stairs of the flight deck, tripping my way to the door I'm in such a hurry.
Where are you going?
Baibong yells at my back as I race through the door and disappear down the corridor.
Watch Captain Bob!
I yell, not waiting for a response and not offering any explanation. This is between me and the man pretending to be named Rollo.
Chapter 13.
Footsteps catch up behind me. I don't need to turn around to know it's Jeffers on my six.
What are you going to do? Are you going to float him? Why are you in such a hurry?
I can't answer him. My mind is too full of images and sounds, memories from a past I can't seem to leave behind. What's happening here can't be happening. And yet it is. My history is back again to haunt me. Will it never end? I reach the airlock and slam my hand onto the keypad to open the door. Rollo is standing there in shock at seeing me, his eyeballs bulging from their sockets and his mouth hanging open.
When were you going to tell me?
I ask, folding my arms over my chest to keep myself from punching him in the face. I'm breathing like I've run 50 laps around the ship's interior.
Tell you what?
He backs up a step.
You know what? When were you going to tell me?
I still can't believe this is happening. He's here. He's really here. Un-fucking believable. Now half of me wants to punch him, and half of me wants to hug him.
He shakes his head, aiming for an expression of pity, I think.
Sorry, but you've lost Rollo. Rollo is confused. Or maybe you're confused about something.
I uncross my arms. Screw being civil. My hand rests at my thigh, my fingers grazing over the handle of my knife. My fingers tremble with the shock of what I see before me. It's all becoming clearer. The curve of his chin, the angle of his cheekbones. I didn't see it before because of the MI, but I see it now.
Rollo's eyes drop down and he takes in my movements.
As he registers my agitation and aggressive stance, his legs spread apart just the slightest bit. I grin at his tell.
You are such a crafty bastard.
I shake my head at him, more of my fear being replaced by warmer feelings evoked from our mutual past.
Damn, I've missed you, asshole.
Talk about balls. Sneaking onto my ship? Selling me out to Captain Bob? Who else knows where I am, huh? Did you signal the OSG, too?
His face goes blank.
Rollo really doesn't know what you're talking about.
He swallows with effort, a dead giveaway that he's lying. He might be sneaky, but he's no super spy. If I'd paid closer attention, I probably would have seen him giving himself away 100 times by now. I'm seriously losing my touch. How did I not see this before? I can feel Jeffers at my back, and his presence is comforting, even though I know I can take Rollo down if he even thinks about making a move I don't like. I've done it once before, so I know I can do it again. Not that I want to. Hell, I didn't want to the first time I did it, but I was given no choice then. That doesn't stop me from wishing I'd made different decisions, though. We all live and learn, but my lessons were particularly harsh. They still haunt me, and I know they'll never let me go. This situation is evidence of that. That whole talking in the third person thing had me fooled, I say, yanking myself back to the present. Putting that distance between himself and this made-up person Rollo in his head made it possible for him to lie very convincingly. I thought you were just some kind of droid head, but now I see it for the genius it was. Well done, Macon. Well done. At the sound of that name, his skin takes on a very pale shade of pink. When I slide the knife out of its sheath, the color drops away from his complexion entirely, and he goes white.
Who's Macon?
I point the knife at his face. You're Macon. I wave the blade around slowly, first pointing at his ears and then his nose, finally his neck. You've had a lot of MI, that's for sure. I didn't recognize you at all. Not until you messed with your ear, anyway. His hand starts to drift up to his ear, but when he catches himself doing it, he stops and scowls.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Folding his arms across his chest, he looks over my shoulder at Jeffers.
I think your captain is having an episode or something. Maybe that disc thing is making her sick again.
Jeffers steps up next to me and stops.
You know him from your time with the USG.
I nod as I smile.
That I do. And his name is Macon, I take it.
Yes, it is. I point at his throat. See that little, tiny white line there on his neck? Jeffers leans in as Mason/Rollo bends backward, trying to put distance between them.
Yes, I think I do. It's very faint.
Pretty decent, am I, but not perfect. That's the scar I made during my level 10 test. Macon can't hide the anger that flits across his face or the embarrassment that soon follows. Sweat breaks out across his brow, but I'm not sure if it's from nervousness or from him wanting to strangle me. It doesn't stop my heart aching for him either way. Jeffers stands up straight and the tempo of his speech picks up.
You told us about that. Gus asked you if you won, but you never answered.
I don't say anything for a while. I just watch as several emotions fight a battle inside my old friend and are mirrored over his face. Anger, sadness, fear, desperation, defeat. I lost that day. I finally say, I lost big time. Macon scowls, his expression finally settling on angry.
She won. Believe me, she won.
Macon's shoulders sag and his head drops.
She might as well have killed me.
I put the knife back where it belongs and take 3 big steps forward. Throwing my arms around my old friend, the one I nearly killed, the one person I've ever regretted hurting. I grip him to me like I'm drowning in this sea of Caspian, and he's my only hope of survival.
I've missed you, Macon.
He stands as stiff as a board.
Not sure I can say the same about you, Cass.
Chapter 14. He might not want me here, hugging the crap out of him, but I'm not going to let that dissuade me. I've been dreaming of being able to do this for 3 long years, and I'm not going to walk away from the opportunity. He can try to kill me later. I've been waiting a long time to say this to you, Macon. I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry for what I did to you. He goes even stiffer, if that's possible. My heart feels like it's cracking in two. I know you hate me, I know what I did was wrong, and I know I should have chosen our friendship over that test. I'll never stop being sorry for making the wrong decision. His body hitches, but it could be from the effort it's taking to not strangle me rather than sadness. Regardless, I keep going, knowing that he deserves my confession as much as I need to give it. I know it's not an acceptable excuse, but we were under a lot of pressure to perform, to win, and you know what the punishment was to refuse the test.
Yeah,
he says, pulling himself out of my embrace.
Demotion, banishment, death. Trust me, I know.
His suffering is etched into his face, deep lines and tight rows around his eyes and mouth, reminding me of a man twice his age and not the 22-year-old I know him to be. I have no idea what he went through after our challenge, but it couldn't have been good. Obviously, he survived and went through some pretty extensive MI, but was it after they banished him to an uninhabited planet, or before? And how did he get where he is today, still alive? It speaks to his resilience and cunning, because the OSG doesn't generally let recruits who wash out of the program wander around the galaxy. The whole thing brings tears to my eyes and makes my heart ache for him and for me.
Neither one of you should ever have been put into that situation,
Jeffers says, breaking through the mood that had settled between Megan and me.
You were children. Children being asked to kill one another.
The disgust in his voice is impossible to miss. Both Macon and I look at him, distracted by this near stranger's strong opinion that we all three share. What do you know about it? I ask.
Enough to say that it's wrong, and it has consequences that are very far-reaching. Look at you.
He gestures at us with a flung-out hand.
Friends turned into enemies. For what? For a show of force? Against whom? Your own people.
Macon and I both shrug, but I'm the one who speaks for us. It's all we knew. We were raised in the middle of it.
You don't question,
Macon adds.
You just follow orders.
Not anymore, I say, turning back to my friend. I go my own way. Macon lifts his chin.
So do I.
My smile isn't so happy this time. But you stowed away on my ship and gave my location away to this guy, Bob. I step away from Macon as my heart turns to lead in my chest. We were friends once, but now I see that he views me as an enemy, and while I might want to go back to where we used to be, I know it's unrealistic to think this could ever happen. Those who were friends are now enemies. The story of my life. What am I supposed to do with you now?
Macon moves to the center of the chamber, his arms hanging by his sides, his face like stone.
I remember it that way once before, right before our fight began. He accepted his fate then, knowing he was outmatched, and he's accepting it now.
Float me. I'm ready.
He turns his back to me and stares out the airlock portal at the dark beyond. Jeffers looks at me, anger simmering in his eyes because he thinks I'm going to push that red button. I won't lie. The thought is crossing my mind. The punishment for treason is death. The punishment for trying to take over someone's ship, for bringing bad people on board, is death. But today, death feels like a mistake, like something I don't want to invite into my world. Because death has a funny way of sticking around. He's like a visitor who doesn't know when it's time to go back home. And Macon is my friend. I kept Macon from leaving my world once before by refusing to take the final step in our match. And I'm going to have to do it again. I sigh heavily as the weight of my decision settles onto my shoulders. I will live with these consequences, good or bad. I just wish I knew what they were going to be before I committed to them. My father would be so disappointed in me and the mercy I'm about to show. The thought of that brings just a sliver of light into my world and makes the burden on my shoulders just a fraction lighter. I walk backward until I'm at the threshold, my heart breaking into several pieces as I view my friend's back. His stance tells me he's ready to be sacrificed for the sins of our fathers, that he expects nothing from me because he doesn't believe I have it in me to be merciful. I deserve the rejection, there's no doubt about that. The small act of clemency I showed him before by not slitting his artery when I could have and was expected to has obviously caused him untold pain. I deserve whatever hatred he has festering in his soul against me. Hell, I nearly killed him, This after years of friendship and support going in both directions. At one point, I thought he might even be interested in me romantically. Not that I reciprocated that emotion, but still. It sucks to be almost killed by someone you love and trust. I know that better than anyone. Just keep an eye on him, I say to Jeffers with a hoarse voice before leaving them both in the airlock.
Is he to be considered an enemy?
Jeffers calls out after me. I respond when I'm several meters down the corridor and in better control of my emotions.
No, just someone we can't trust.
There's a lot more I need to figure out before I'll be ready to make any hard decisions about this situation with Macon. For now, Captain Bob is my more immediate problem. I try not to be happy about putting things off with Macon because it's the sign of someone who can't be decisive. But I am. I can't deal with him right now. He's here, he's alive, and I'm hopeful that he won't hate me forever, even though I have no reason to be. He's probably been waiting for the perfect moment to slit my throat since the moment he saw me. The portal to the flight deck slides open to admit me, and I find Baybong in my chair. He gets up when I climb the steps and goes back to his seat.
Sorry, it's just easier with your array when I have to watch everything.
Not a problem. I notice that the comm line is up and the clear panel is still showing Rollo facing the dark beyond the airlock. You heard everything?
Impossible not to.
Baybong isn't looking at me. I clear my throat, ashamed that Baybong knows what I did, but knowing he deserves to hear the truth. Macon was my friend, like family to me.
Sounds like you fucked up,
he says simply. A tear slips past and I quickly wipe it away. I did. I really did.
Everyone fucks up once in a while.
Does everyone fuck up by slitting her friend's throat? Baybong doesn't answer at first, but then he turns his chair around and stares at me. I have to drop my gaze under the intensity of it.
Listen,
Baybong says, sounding tired.
Was it wrong to slit his throat from a moral standpoint? Yes, no one's going to argue against you there. But it's never just about morality when you're fighting, is it? Besides, who you were then is not who you are now. Otherwise, I wouldn't be hanging out with you. I like my head attached to my body too much to hang out with people who go around beheading their friends.
I shrug. Maybe you're right.
How long after that fight did you leave the OSG?
I think back to the day, to the minutes and hours after my confrontation with Macon. I went by in a blur then. I was so panicked. But with the perspective of distance and time, I can see things more clearly now. Probably more so than ever before. Being with Macon again has brought it all back. Within hours, actually.
Tell me about it.
I look up at the clear panel that shows Bob floating off in the distance.
What about him?
Baybong's gaze never leaves me.
He can wait. He's not going anywhere, and Adele is watching for any signs of weaponry warming up for use.
He bends over to rest his forearms on his thighs.
Talk to me. Tell me what happened.
Chapter 15. I look off into the distance as the memories assail me. It's like Baybong has opened up a door that I've kept locked up tight for a long time. A flood of emotions, sounds, and faces rushes across my mind's eye, and I start to talk without even realizing what I'm going to say. I just let the words flow out of me like a poison I have to rid my system of. It was a huge day for both of us. Level 10 testing is a super big deal in the OSG. To everyone there, actually. Family, friends, people you don't even know care about how you do. Everything rides on that fight.
A fight to the death, right?
Yeah. Even hearing someone else say it makes me ashamed.
Sickening, huh?
I'm not judging. I'm just listening. Don't stop.
I have to let out a shaky breath before I can continue. I've already made big mistakes with friends. I don't need to make any more, and keeping Baybong in the dark about who I am and what I've done is pushing him away. I'm done with that shit. You don't know who you're going to be matched against. It's not random, though. A panel of instructors picks and matches the contenders. They're supposed to assess strengths and weaknesses and place them together to make it as fair as possible.
What's the point of it?
The point? I shrug. I don't know, to weed out the ones who can't cut it? To end up with the best of the best?
So they train recruits until they're like, what, 18? And then let half of them die?
Pretty much. Not everyone dies, but the ones who don't wish they had.
Why?
I look up. Because they get banished, stripped of everything. It's pretty much certain death, but slow and painful. Not like being floated.
Banished where?
I can tell he doesn't get it. I cringe inside while giving the details. There's this planet. It's called Morab. Most people don't even know it exists.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, well, it's in the far reaches, past the Badlands even. Losers who aren't killed in the round get dumped off there with nothing but the clothes on their backs.
And you're sure they die there? That's the goal?
I shrug, kind of not certain now, even though I used to be very sure of the answer to this question. Before, I would have said they all died. The place is a dust bowl. There's no water to speak of. Bacteria like none we have here. No MI, no shelters. Questionable atmospheric conditions and poor oxygen levels. It doesn't make any sense that Macon's alive, really.
And yet he is.
Baybong sounds excited. I look up and nod. Yeah, he is. I got lucky.
You both got lucky. Or things on Morab are not what you think.
I wait for him to continue, knowing from his posture that he's about to go on a roll.
What if people don't die there? What if they survive and find a way off the planet?
I shrug, thinking about the implications. Then the OSG has a big group of people out there who are really pissed at them and probably harboring some seriously vengeful thoughts against them, too.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe Rollo, Macon, was never sent there. Maybe he got away like you did.
I shake my head. He was almost dead. I honestly don't know how he survived at all. There's no way he got up and walked away. Baybong snorts.
He survived because you let him. Don't try and play it like it was an accident. I know you well enough to know that if you'd wanted him dead, he'd be dead. You're a crazy bitch like that.
A tiny smile tries to escape my lips, but I tamp it down quickly.
Stop saying that. No, I'm not going to stop because it's true. If you'd wanted to cut the guy's damn head off, it'd be done. And you are a crazy bitch. You don't hold back unless you want to show mercy. The guy should be thanking you and kissing your ass, not trying to sell you out to a fly-by-night droid fucker like Captain Bob. Captain Boob is more like it.
A laugh barks out of me. I can't help it. It feels so good to hear Baybong's soothing words, even though I know I don't deserve them. I gesture at the lame duck ship that's pretending to be something it's not. So, what are we going to do with Captain Boob? Baybong shrugs.
I don't know. You're the captain of this tank, not me.
A captain who's open to ideas. I wiggle my eyebrows at him, knowing it'll get my friend thinking about all the crazy gadgets he has hidden away in his chamber. I'm hoping he has something we can use against Captain Boob that'll make all my problems go away. A problem atomizer. That would be awesome. Kapew! Problems be gone. Baybong turns his chair around and faces the guy.
Let's drag him in. Make him stick around for a little while longer.
Can we do that? Nothing I've ever read in my DS manuals ever hinted about any of them having tow kits that could take on a ship who wasn't willing. I can tell Baybong is smiling by the way his ears are moving back toward me.
Oh, trust me.
He says.
We can tow his sorry ass.
I close my eyes for a few seconds and try to envision what exactly that might entail, but I give up pretty easily.
Explain yourself, Slant Eye.
He punches up the comlink for engineering.
Yo, Gus.
Gus here,
comes the voice.
Talk dirty to me. You think we can tow a PC cruiser with that rig you told me about hooked up to my thingy? Heck yeah, man. No problem. It'd be aces.
Tam's voice comes from the background, a little fainter than his brother's was.
I wouldn't do it if I were you.
I sigh and roll my eyes. Baybong leans in closer to his transmitter.
Captain says she wants this guy to stick around.
The background voice of Tam comes again.
Don't do it, Captain. It's not going to work.
Shut up, Dick!
The sounds of something crashing and then a loud siren come out over the speaker for about 10 seconds. Then it all cuts off along with a transmission link. Beibong stands.
I'm going to go check things out.
Yeah, you do that. I watch him leave and then turn my attention back to Captain Boob. So what's your damage? I say softly at the clear panel. Are you here to just mess with me or to take me down? I press the comm that will link me to him again. Captain Bob, you still there?
Still here. Still waiting on answers.
He sounds bored. Rolo's not going to float today, but he has given me a lot to think about.
Oh, he has he? Did he mention he's an escaped convict, wanted by the OSG? You'd do better to cut him loose than keep him around. Trust me on that.
My hackles go up, but I play it cool.
Thanks for the tip. How'd you come to be partnering with him?
Me? Partnering with that guy? Psh, please. I don't partner with gutter rats. He told me he knew someone interested in doing some trades, so I followed him out here to have a little private conversation with his contact. Do a little business, maybe. Nothing too formal. I had no idea he hitched a ride without your knowledge.
This story might be believable if the guy telling it wasn't such a snake. But I know better.
What kind of trades were you wanting to do?
Oh, nothing much. Little of this, little of that.
I smell the stink of lies coming with every single word that arrives over our comlink.
You interested in chickens by any chance?
There's a really long pause before he finally answers.
Chickens, you say? What kind of chickens you got?
He can't keep the excitement from his voice. Idiot. No one gets that jacked up over poultry. Not even way out here.
Well, they're not very fresh, but we might have one. My heart is hammering in my chest.
If this guy knows about the dead chickens, what can that mean for us? For the Alliance? Maybe he's Alliance and this is some kind of test.
I'd be interested. No need for freshness. Gonna feed it to my pig I got back at the old homestead. So, you know, even rotten is good.
Holy crap. He went for it. Captain Boob is right.
Great to hear, I say, using my soothing voice, letting him think I'm that stupid.
How about we dock up and see what there is to see? I'm sure you've got something I'd love to have on your ship.
You got it, little lady. Happy to. Standard protocol?
I try really, really hard to keep the grin out of my voice.
Yeah, sure. Standard is fine. Looking forward to doing business with you.
As soon as he starts to move his ship into position and we cut the comlink, I smash my hand onto the array and yell.
All crew members, prepare to be boarded by a stinking liar who is trying to pull a scam on us. Engineering, you there?
My breath is coming out in puffs as my pulse races way too fast.
Oh, hell yeah, we're here, Captain,
Gus says.
You want us to arm up? I got a ray repeater down here that'll knock your socks off. Or his socks off. It'll leave your socks alone, as long as it's aimed properly, of course.
No, keep the arms unobtrusive. I don't want him knowing we have the intent to keep him here, and I don't want him seeing any firepower.
Got it. Engineering outskies.
Lucinda cuts in from the biogrid.
I don't know what you expect me to do.
Lock up, Lucinda. No admittance to anyone, not even into the antechamber, and that includes Rolo.
Okay. She sounds more alert now. Anything I should be aware of?
Turns out Rolo's an old friend who's kind of pissed at me, so he's not going to be working on the grid for now.
Great, she says, hissing out of breath. Forget sleeping, I guess.
I'll get you some help, I promise.
Even if I have to turn myself into a damn brown shins again.
I've gotta go, just stay locked up until further notice.
Understood, biogrid out.
Jeffers?
I say, after linking up the hallway outside the float chamber, where he's standing and watching Macon beyond the portal window.
Yes, Captain.
We're being boarded by Captain Boob. I mean, Captain Bob.
I have to pause to wipe the sweat from my brow.
Lock Macon in the chamber and join me in the cargo bay, would you please?
Yes, Captain. Right away.
He locks a portal and Macon doesn't even flinch. It's like he's given up. And that hurts even more than him being angry with me.
Adele?
I don't realize I'm yelling until my voice bounces around the flight deck. I clear my throat to try and get a handle on my emotions.
Yes, Captain. We're going to dock up with that PC cruiser off the starboard side. I'll need your assistance with that, and also, I'd like you to tap into his electronics, if at all possible, and disable them. He might have a cold wall up, which would interfere in my ability to do that. I realize that. Just do the best you can. I don't want him getting off my ship until I'm good and ready. I will do my best, Captain. I run from the flight deck, the cargo bay my destination. Chapter 16. Our ships link together. Captain Bob comes through the airlock. A blinking red light above his head in the short corridor alerts me to the fact that he's armed. His curly black hair and bushy beard make him look like an old-school Earth pirate. The big, overfed gut hanging over a thick leather belt is not hurting that image one bit. If he smiles at me and has metal for teeth, I will not be surprised. If you could just leave your weapons on your side, that'd be great, I say, smiling as encouragingly as I can. He pauses.
Not sure that's such a good idea for my welfare.
He rubs the buttons of his shirt at the front of his belly, then his fingers glide over and scratch at a spot off to the side. His upper teeth bite into the beard below his lower lip as his eyes roam the cargo space, taking its measure. Ew. I can only imagine how long it's been since he's bathed. The smell drifting over from his direction tells me it's been a while. I shrug off his concerns. It's just policy. No one from another ship gets on with weapons. But if it makes you feel any better, all I have on me is this. I point to the knife at my leg and try to look as girly as possible. Twirling my hair around my finger seems like the thing to do. I grin as hard as I can while doing it. He frowns at me.
You feeling okay, little lady? You look a little... peaked.
I stop the twirling and the grinning. I guess I'm not as good at the girly thing as I thought.
Damn it.
Yeah, I'm fine. You here to deal or not? I don't have all day.
Thought you were hanging around for something,
he says, pulling a gun from his waistband at his back and twirling it around like he's a practiced gunslinger. I've met enough droid heads to know that the ability to spin a gun doesn't necessarily translate into the ability to fire one and hit anything accurately, so it doesn't impress me like I think it's supposed to. I shrug. Just doing a little spit shine on the ship? I gesture to the still marked up walls in the cargo bay around us. As you can see, she's in pretty bad shape.
You been captain for long on her?
His eyes continue to roam the space in appraisal. He's probably dreaming about stealing her from me, the bastard.
Nope, just got her. Got lots to do to get her shipshape.
I rub my hands together. Put that gun in the airlock, and we can get started. What have you got to trade? He walks backward very slowly, reaching up to hang his gun by the trigger loop on a hook inside the airlock, just past the door on our side.
Welp, I got some quasi-crystal if you're interested.
What kind? Baybong would probably give one of his eye teeth for a chunk big enough to power one of his stupid gadgets. The refractions coming off some of those things can focus a lot of power, depending on its clarity and subtype.
Katong Rose?
I nod. Yep, Baybong is going to be handing over some teeth.
Nice. Can I see it?
He shrugs.
Let me see your chicken first.
It's in the deep freeze right now. We were trying to keep the smell from getting too bad. Tam shows up at the entrance to the corridor that leads into the cargo bay.
We all good in here? Need me for anything?
No thanks, Tam. I'm going to have Jeffrey show us to the deep freeze so Captain Bob here can take a look at what we have to trade. He's interested in chicken. I open my eyes a little wider so he can see that I have a plan. Kind of. I don't actually know where the damn deep freeze is. I just know that this is where we decided to keep the Schlafhammer and its smelly host until we know better what to do with it, and it's got to be a more confined area than this cargo hold. I need to get Captain Bob in a smaller space without his gun, and then I'll be able to control the situation with minimal risk to myself or my crew. Tam nods.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Chicken. Cool.
He backs slowly out of the cargo area and into the corridor, quickly disappearing from view. Jeffers moves off toward a hallway I haven't explored too much yet, and I gesture for Captain Bob to precede me. He walks sideways, apparently not too excited about leaving his back exposed to me like that. I guess he's not as stupid as he looks.
Why'd you keep it?
He asks.
The chicken, if it was stinking and all.
I wasn't going to, actually, but this guy who used to be on the ship came after me for it, so I figured it was pretty special to him, at least. Thought he might come after us again, and decided it'd be better to have a bargaining chip if he's going to be persistent about it. I focus on Bob's body language, trying to figure out if he knows Tremblay by his reaction. So far, he's giving nothing away, walking slumped over, looking over his left shoulder at me every few seconds. Apparently, he expects my attack to come in the form of me jumping on his back. But that's not how this is going to go down. I don't plan for there to be that much body contact if and when I take him out.
"Some guy, huh?"
he asks.
"You don't know him?"
I know his name, but that's about it. I gesture at our guide. Jeffers knows him better than I do.
"His name is Tremblay," Jeffers says, not turning around.
He moves up a narrow set of stairs to a small door ahead. It has a wheel lock on the front of it that has to be turned with two hands.
"He piloted this ship before Cass came to be captain."
Jeffers grips the ring and begins to turn it.
"I didn't know too much about him outside of that."
"Do you know him?" I ask Bob.
"Nope, don't recognize the name. Can't say that I do. Nope, never met him."
"Lie." Okay, so Captain Bob knows the pilot and he knows about the chicken, too. Does this mean he's Alliance? That Tremblay's Alliance? I'm finding either one of those scenarios hard to believe. If they are Alliance, it makes me worry about joining. Do I really want to be aligned with guys like this? Dependent on them for my survival? The whole idea is rather sickening when I think about it for more than 2 seconds. This guy is one of the worst liars and the worst players of the lame duck gambit I've ever encountered. Jeffers pushes in the door and steps into a small chamber just in front of a wall of large drawers. His breath comes out in puffs of white smoke around his face.
"Do you remember which drawer, Captain?"
Jeffers is waiting for me to tell him what to do. The only problem is, now that I'm here, I have no idea what my next step should be.
Chapter 17.
Bob turns to me, a smirk on his face.
"Yes, which one is it, Captain? Tell us."
I look at the bank of drawers in front of me, my vision going a little blurry. It's like I'm playing a game of truth or dare, and I'm almost sure the truth is going to be the wrong answer here. Better turn this game around then, Cass. I smile, acting like I haven't a care in the world. "First, tell me how you know Tremblay." "Truth or dare, Captain Boob?" Captain Bob turns around to face me more fully now, leaving Jeffers at his back. "First mistake, asshole."
"What makes you think I know this Tremblay person?"
"I know that's why you're here. You heard about our chicken and decided to get it for yourself. What I don't know is whether this is a deal negotiated between you and Landglade's man, or if you decided to go rogue and just take it for yourself once you realized he'd lost possession of it." He smirks.
"You sure do get your head in a twist over some crazy things, don't you? You been in the dark too long, little lady? That's why you're so obsessed with dead animals? You know, back in the day, they used to call things like that roadkill, and they weren't good for keeping around."
"So, you're choosing dare, is that it?"
"Ugh,
I hate it when people don't cooperate." My eyes roll in annoyance. "Another Earth lover. Figures." I back up a step to prepare myself for the inevitable. Narrowing my eyes at him, I rest my hand on my dagger. "I'm giving you another chance to answer my questions before I become more forceful about it. Why don't you spare us both the hassle and come forward?" I point at his beard. "Do that, and I promise not to cut that roadkill off your face." He leans way back and bursts out a big belly guffaw that leaves his midsection jumping around long after he's done enjoying himself at my expense.
"Aren't you a pistol?"
He's grinning, but there's a hint of malice to it that has me alert to potential sudden moves that he might be thinking about making against me.
"Cute, too. Too bad you don't know how to use the brains God gave you."
He reaches out toward me with one of his big mitts. "Second mistake, asshole." My knife catches him in mid-grab. The upward reverse stroke I used opens up the palm of his hand to the tune of a 6-centimeter slash that'll take enough stitches to close that I'm not worried about him using that hand against me anytime soon. As the man howls in pain, Jeffers grabs him over the shoulder at his collarbone, using a simple three-fingered pinch with a deep thrust from his thumb behind the bone to bring the guy to his knees. I watch as Captain Bob's eyes widen and then glaze over in pain as he slowly sinks to the ground with his hand cradled to his chest, where it continues to bleed down his shirt. My knife is dripping fat, hairy pirate blood, so I lower it to his shoulder and wipe it off. When it's as clean as it's going to get, I bring the point to the guy's face so he can see the tip of it really clearly. Ever been stuck in a deep freezer before? His beard is trembling from rage or fear, I'm not sure which. Not that it matters. I'm in too far to turn back now.
It's pretty painful, actually.
My voice is light, almost happy. I attribute this to the fact that at least I'm getting somewhere with him now. Besides, he chose a dare over giving me the truth. It's not my fault he underestimated his opponents.
Especially for the fingers, the toes, and then the nose and the chin for some reason.
I think back to the time when I was forced to endure that torture. I'm lost in the memory for a few seconds before I come back to the matter at hand.
It's a lot easier to just answer questions, to be honest. I mean, the freezing is bad, but the thawing out is way worse. Trust me on this.
His mouth is trembling with rage.
You're going to pay for this.
I'm already paying for it. I wave my hand in front of my face.
Jesus, when was the last time you washed?
He lifts his elbows like he's thinking about using his one good hand to slash out at me, but he needs to get his balance first. I don't think this guy gets on his knees very often. I shake my head.
Don't do it, pirate. I'm fresh out of patience with you.
I step a little closer, letting the blade get nearer to his nose. He's going cross-eyed looking at it for a moment before he lifts his gaze to me, his dark eyes narrowed.
You came at me with bad intentions, Captain Bob. That gives me the right to defend myself by any means necessary.
I sway the knife around and back off a little.
Tremblay's not worth the price you'll pay for not telling me what I want to know.
What do you want to know about Tremblay?
He finally asks. I shrug. Not much. Enough, though.
He's not going to just disappear because you want it that way.
Is that supposed to worry me?
It should.
Whatever. Tell me what I want to know, and I'll let you get back on your ship.
What I won't do is let him back on his ship while it's still able to operate independently, but he doesn't need to know that right now.
My plan becomes crystal clear in that moment. This jack-off is going to be delivered to our friends in the Alliance as my good faith gesture. What better way to prove they can trust me than by handing this scumbag over? A guy who is after their technology and willing to kill to get it.
I need to stand. My knees are bad.
He shifts left and then right, assuming I'll agree and working his way up to getting on his feet. I press on his shoulder with the flat side of my blade.
Bad knees? Better talk fast then, old man. The truth shall set those knees free.
Hunkering down, he sighs heavily. The sharp odors of not only a lack of hygiene, but also fear are wafting up from his body. I'm so glad he got there without me having to resort to more bloodshed. My ship is dirty enough as it is. He grunts and speaks while staring at my boots. His tone tells me he's ashamed to be confessing in my presence. The little lady he sorely misjudged has literally brought him to his knees. He won't forget this for a very long time, which is going to be